William the psychiatrist. He's taken a house in Green Lane, William's elder brother Robert was saying at lunch. He's a famous Harley Street psychiatrist, you know. Arnold Summers. Anyone who knows anything about psychiatry knows the name. I've never quite understood what psychiatrists do, said Mrs. Brown. Well, they cure mental trouble, said Robert. As far as I can make out, the patient lies on a couch and talks, and the psychiatrist writes down what he says, and, well, that seems to cure the whole trouble. William fixed an earnest gaze on Robert. And they get famous just doing that. Yes, snapped Robert, and don't talk with your mouth full. That afternoon, William said to Ginger, I've thought of a different thing I'm going to be. It's going to be easier to be famous at than being a diver. What? Said Ginger. It's I've forgotten the word. Anyway, it's curing mental troubles. We'll start it tomorrow. We'll charge threepence each. If we get enough of them, we could buy that helicopter from the village shop. Next morning, William said, I've wrote what that word was. He fixed a notice to the door of the old barn. It read, William Brown, psychiatrist, mental troubles cured, threepence each. There, he said. I'm the one that does it, and you're the receptionist, same as at the dentist's. Some minutes later, a thin, harassed-looking man entered the barn. Oh, which of you is the psychiatrist? He said. Me, said William. It's me that cures mental troubles. Have you got any? Oh, yes. How do you cure them? You lie down and talk, and I listen, said William. Oh, do you mind if I sit? Said the man, taking his seat on a packing case. My name's Peaslake. Oh, said William, I've not got a notebook, because I don't write as quick as people talk. Mr. Peaslake's face creased anxiously. It's utterly ridiculous, of course, my coming in here. But I had a letter this morning that's driven me nearly mad. I haven't any intimate friends to confide in, and when I saw your notice, I thought that if I could talk about it to anyone at all, it might help. All right, said William. Go on, talk. Who is this letter from? Amanda, my fiancée. But in this letter, she's breaking off the engagement. She's coming this evening to return my presents. I thought she'd be pleased with the spin dryer, but she said it showed a lack of imagination. She says I lack the vital spark. Her letter, it shattered my world to its foundations. I'm not worthy of her, but I simply can't face life without her. Well, I think you're jolly lucky getting rid of her, said William. They're all bossy. Gosh, even when they seem all right at first, they always turn out bossy before they've finished. I once knew a girl that I thought I was supposed to do the talking, put in Mr. Peaslake. All right, said William. Go on. Well, my whole life shattered. You've had 3 pennyworth of talk about that, said William. Are your mental troubles cured? No, said Mr. Peaslake. They're only just beginning. I've had the most splitting headache ever since I received the letter. It'll be another threepence if you're going to start on headaches, William warned him. Oh, well. Mr. Peaslake got up and handed 3 pennies to William. Thank you. At least it's whiled away some minutes from the endless stretch of meaningless existence that lies ahead of me. And he set off across the field. Crackers, said William. He jolly well deserves his mental troubles. And serve him right if she took him back, too. Mr. Summers, the well-known psychiatrist, was reading the notice. Though a well-known psychiatrist, he felt himself badly in need of psychiatric treatment. He tried to treat himself without success, and pride had prevented his going to another practitioner. He hesitated, then entered the barn. "Do you want to be done?" said William. "Yes, please," said Mr. Summers. He was a short, rather plump man. "Have you got mental trouble?" said William. "Oh, yes," said Mr. Summers. "They're threepence each. I mean, if you've got 2, it's 6. You're supposed to lie down, but you can sit if you'd rather. The last one we did sat." Mr. Summers sat. "Right," said William. "Talk. But if it's about someone shattering your life, you needn't say it more than once.
My trouble, said Mr. Summers, is that I'm bored. Bored to distraction. Things never used to get on my nerves, now everything does. I thought a change of surroundings might cure me, so I took a house here. Delightful little house in Green Lane. But everything in it gets on my nerves. The white paint, the cretonne-covered chairs, even the holly bush in the garden. I used to get fun out of everything, but I can't now. I feel that if I could have one good belly laugh, I'd be cured, but there seems to be no colour in my life. I'm just bored with everything.
He stopped.
Well, go on, said William. That's all, said Mr. Summers.
Are you cured?
No.
Well, it's your fault if you're not, said William. You can't have talked right.
Maybe, agreed Mr. Summers.
He rose and handed William a 10-shilling note.
Keep the change, he said,
and set off towards the road.
Crumbs, gasped William. 10 shillings! We can get that helicopter now, said Ginger. We can get one each.
Yes, said William, but we've got to cure his mental troubles now he's given us all this money.
Well, what can you do? Said Ginger. You can't stop him being bored. And what about the other man?
Oh, I'm not going to bother about him. He only gave us threepence, but
10 shillings? I say, he said there wasn't any colour in his life. Come on, I've got an idea.
Only one house in Green Lane had a holly bush in the garden. Later that afternoon, carrying tins of paint purloined from William's father's shed, and having ascertained the house was empty, they gained access via a handy garden seat, a drainpipe, and the bathroom window. They went downstairs and entered a neat, all-white sitting room.
"Let's start on the mantelpiece," said William. "We'll have it red, shall we?"
"No, yellow," said Ginger.
"Red and yellow," said William.
"Yes, and a bit of blue."
"All right, and we might as well put a bit of green, too. Come on, let's start sloshing it on."
They set to work. Red, blue, green and yellow spread over the mantelpiece and its surround in great uneven sweeps, fell in blobs onto the hearth, crept into William's hair, over Ginger's pullover and legs. Then they did the walls. They stepped back and surveyed the result.
"Well, that ought to cheer him up all right," said Ginger.
"Now we'll do that bit round the bottom," said William.
They did it in patches, red, blue, green and yellow. Again, they stepped back.
"Well, I must say I like it," said William. "Don't you?"
"Yes, I do," said Ginger. "It just couldn't help cheering anyone up."
"We've still got the door to do," said William. "We'll just do a few big sploshes."
William was just adding some yellow when Ginger said,
"He's coming down the road."
"Who?" said William.
"The man that lives here, the man you did this morning."
William was at the gate when Mr. Summers reached it.
"We've got something to show you," said William.
Looking a little mystified, Mr. Summers followed him into the sitting room.
"Well, what do you think of it?" William asked.
"Hey, it's colourful," said Mr. Summers.
"Do you like it?"
"It would take some getting used to."
"Oh, you'll soon get used to it," said William. "And anyway, it's not boring."
"Oh, no, no. And presumably whoever lives here must like this sort of thing."
"But it's your house, isn't it?" said William.
"No, no, it's not my house."
"But you live here?"
"No, I don't."
But you said there was a holly bush in your garden."
"The holly bush is in my back garden," said Mr. Summers. "My house is at the further end of the lane."
"Oh, gosh. Well, I wonder who does live here."
"I've no idea."
They heard the click of the front gate and looked out of the window. Mr. Peaslake was entering what was obviously his own domain. His footsteps passed through the hall and out to the back garden.
"Come on,"
whispered William. As they opened the front door, a car was drawing up at the gate with a flamboyant-looking young woman at the wheel.
"Upstairs," said William, closing the door. "Quick!"
As if hypnotized, Mr. Summers followed them upstairs. They looked out of the bathroom window. The garden seat had gone from directly below. Mr. Peaslake had put it beside his rose garden, where he was cutting off dead blooms. There was a knock at the front door, and Mr. Peaslake went to answer it.
"Amanda!"
he cried, in a tone of mingled joy and anguish. "Come and help me with the spin dryer, Albert," said a clear, resonant voice.
"Yes, dear."
"Come on," said William, "out at the back."
They had reached the foot of the stairs when they heard,
"Go and get a receptacle for the casseroles, Albert,"
and hasty footsteps returning to the house.
"Quick, in here," said William, opening the door of a cupboard beneath the stairs.
The three squeezed into it. William set his tin of paint on a shelf above the door. There was a sound of a heavy article being moved across the hall. Then,
"Well, I'm going now, Albert."
"Oh, just come into the sitting room and rest for a moment," pleaded Mr. Peaslake.
There was a short silence, broken by a cry of,
"Albert!"
Then a gasp from Mr. Peaslake was drowned by another cry of,
"Oh, Albert! Oh, how marvellous, how too contemporary, how utterly not suburban! Why, I've misjudged you, Albert. I can see it needs a little finishing off, but not too much, I beg. That unfinished look is too perfect. It's the very essence of primitive art. And to think that I found you conventional, that I thought you lacked the vital spark. Oh, you have it indeed."
"You mean you don't want to break off the engagement?"
"Oh, no, Albert, not now I've found the vital spark in you."
She gave a playful laugh.
"Oh, I shall always know the real Albert now. Let's put the presents back in the car.
I'll see you tomorrow, dearest." Beneath the stairs, Mr. Summers spoke for the first time.
"You wouldn't care to tell me what all this is about, would you?"
"We were trying to cure you of mental troubles," said William. "We thought you lived here." "It was the holly bush sent us wrong," said Ginger. "We wanted you to have a bit of colour instead of the white paint," said William, "because it was on your nerves."
And suddenly Mr. Summers began to laugh. It was a faint, rather rusty laugh at first, but it gathered strength as the full force of the situation struck him. Mr. Peaslake watched the car out of sight, then returned to the house. He stood for a moment in the doorway of the sitting room, looking round with an expression of blank bewilderment. Then he heard strange sounds coming from the cupboard under the stairs. Approaching it, he flung open the door so violently that it threw him off balance and brought down the tin of paint on his head. He sat down heavily, rivulets of yellow paint trickling down his face. And as he looked at him, Mr. Summers' laughter increased in volume. And then Mr. Peaslake began to laugh too. William was losing interest.
"Come on," he said to Ginger. "Let's get those helicopters before the shop closes."
Gusts of laughter followed them along the road.
"I say,"
said Ginger, suddenly noticing their paint-bespattered appearance, "we're going to get into an awful row when we get home."
"Never mind," said William. "We'll have got the helicopters. And we've cured 'em both of mental troubles. Gosh, I must be a jolly good... whatever the word is. I've cured two in one day. I've cured every single one that's been to me. I bet I'd easily make myself famous at it."
A thoughtful frown wrinkled his brow. "But actually, I don't want to be something I can't remember the name of. I'm going back to being something that's easier to say. I'm going back to being a diver."